Welcome to another of my shows. I am your host and producer, Isabel Jubes. This is an archive show of La Ventana Americana. You can find this show and all the information related to it, together with more of my archive productions, on StanfordHispanicBroadcasting.org. Visit our website and be part of this, giving me your opinions and more about your ideas.
This is La Ventana Americana.
La Ventana Americana.
La Ventana Americana.
Esto es La Ventana Americana.
La Ventana Americana.
La Ventana Americana.
La Ventana de Radio 90.1 KCSU Stanford.
From KCSU Stanford 90.1.
Desde KCSU Stanford.
KZSU Stanford 90.1 FM.
This is La Ventana Americana from KCSU Stanford 90.1.
KZSU 90.1 FM.
And the program is La Ventana Americana.
A window to the Latin universe from Stanford to the world.
I am Isabel Jubes.
And I'm Elizabeth Trachtenberg.
Welcome, bienvenido. In the last weeks, we have been showing a series with analysis about the Venezuelan crisis. Most of our experts talk about the largest inflation in the world, the highest crime rate, the staggering scarcity of basic staples, lack of freedom of expression, high corruption. All of these are reasons that protesters in the street talk about. What is intriguing is that Venezuela is the nation with the highest reserve of oil in the world. Hugo Chavez won the elections of 1998 after his failed coup d'etat to the democratic government of Carlos Andrés Pérez a few years earlier. The voters wanted a change. Crime was on the rise and corruption was a commonplace. As soon as the new president got in power, numbers from different organizations show that the crime rate actually raised. From an initial number of 5,000 deaths a year to an annual 24,000 homicides, taken by the Observatorio Venezolano de la Violencia, an organization that translates Venezuelan Observatory of Violence. The polarization is great in the country. Chavistas have been organizing the civil society with militias, and here what Chavez said.
Esta revolución es y está armada.
This revolution is armed. Nobody forgets. Popular militia will have their vehicles, their armament, their militia quarrel, their organizations. You are a force of guerrilla, to say it clear, a force of urban guerrillas and rural guerrillas in the mountains. By Foro Penal Venezolano, during the Pacific civil protests of the last months, the violations of human rights have been in the rise day after day. They blame the armed forces of the government, like the National Guard, and lately the Army Infantry, together with other organizations that are in the street on the defense of the regime. Many people have been in the streets, and even the government supporters have organized their own protests in reaction to all the manifestations by the opposition. Even during the uncertainty and danger, students, youth in general, together with parents, grandparents, and the general civil society has not fallen. They are still fighting on the streets. Their call is SOS Venezuela. Venezuela. Last week, we recorded an interview directly from Venezuela with Alfredo Romero, and today we are airing it. He is the director of Foro Penal Venezuela, founder of the civil association VIVE, which stands for Venezuelan Victim of Human Rights in Spanish. And he is still the legal assessor of that organization, that also has the task of bringing cases of human rights violation to the Ibero-American Human Rights Courts on the Organization of American States. He has worked for many international organizations involved with human rights and got many international prizes and recognitions for his work. Today, he will talk to us about his work with the cases handled by this NGO, Foro Penal Venezuela, during these times of crisis. Today, the panelists in the studio are, as usual, Elizabeth and I, but with the addition of Maritza Kitt, a Venezuelan-American lawyer with professional expertise in both countries.
Can you tell me a little bit about the numbers and the type of case you and your organization are handling?
We have been attended 1,300 detentions from February 9th, so this is the biggest crisis, as I said, of detention in Venezuela of demonstrators. So it's like a war when you have soldiers arrested by the enemy. This is a kind of war, and actually the National Guard looks and feels that it's a kind of war against the civil society.
Yeah.
We have also registered, and when I say registered, it means that we have verified 40 cases of torture. It means people that have been detained, they have been sexually abused. In one case, they have used electric shocks. In another case, in all of the cases, they have injured the students that have been detained. They have hit the students. They have used like sticks in order to sanction them by giving them like killings and things like that. So this is something that is the first time that actually we have seen it. It's a very important repression that is happening in Venezuela.
Declaration of the Ombudswoman, Gabriela Ramirez, was shocking to many last week. Hear a part of what she said.
Por ejemplo, si se aprenden 11 jóvenes o...
If you apprehend 11 young people, or 15, or 20, in one of those places, and somebody's beaten or mistreated, or they try to... Look, torture has one sense. So you really need to be rigorous with one of these terms. So it's used to obtain... So you infringe some physical suffering to some person to get a confession, and we need to differentiate it to what it is excessive use of force or disproportionate use of force.
She was possibly misinterpreted, but she did not give any names or was specific about the cases being handled.
So, last week, the ombudswoman, Gabriela Mar Ramirez Perez, she was trying to redefine the specific between torture and other kind of repression. Can you explain a little bit about the semantics of all the cases? What is considered torture? What is considered... Or other kind of human rights violations that you've been seeing?
Okay. In order to talk about torture, we have to talk about the Torture Convention of the United Nations. That is a law in Venezuela and in different countries in the world. In order to talk about torture, it means when you provide some kind of suffering to one person, and this suffering is being made by a public officer. Torture, when you talk about torture, it means you have four conditions in order to talk about torture. One is when torture is made in order to obtain some kind of confession. This is one. Mm-hmm. Another one is when torture is made in order to obtain, to sanction one person. In order to intimidate. And the fourth one is for because of discrimination. That's what the United Nations Torture Convention establishes. So torture is not just for obtaining a confession. It's more than that. So when we have verified these 40 cases of torture, it means that it's because it's into this definition of torture.
And what is the purpose of these tortures in this case? It will be them to confess, to give away other friends, or to just punish them because they went out to the street and protest?
Most of them are because of they want to punish them in order to stop demonstrations in the street. There is just one case where they use electric shocks in order to obtain some kind of confession. This is one guy, his name is Raul Ayala, that he was detained by the what we call the intelligence police, and there were electric shocks against him, and about 30 electric shocks and things like that. And but this is just one case. The other cases are just to punish them and actually to intimidate them in order to stop the students to go out of to the streets and demonstrate.
How old are these kids? How old are these students? Are they minors, some of them? All of them are over 18?
No, there are some minors. I would say this is about minors. I would say it's about 10% of the students detained. But most of the students are about 18 to 22 years old, no more than that. There are some cases of people older, but most of them, I mean, when you go to a jail, it's like going to high school, I would say, or going to college. And you see like 40 students detained, and you see these kids with handcuffs. We have been attending all these students. Well, so we've been in the courts, and we've been in jails. I mean, we have been working until 4 a.m. every day, attending people that have been detained. We have a center that we collect all these claims from mothers or fathers that are asking for their sons and daughters. And when we receive these calls, all the members of Foro Penal, of my organization, go to the center where they are being detained, or either a military office or either a police department. And so when I talk about what is happening, it is because I have seen it, it's because I have feel it, it's because I have talked to them, and we have assisted them legally and judicially.
So the public has access to this information? How do you let the people know?
Actually, as you know, or you must know, in Venezuela, there is not access to free TV or free radio.
Free speech.
There is a kind of a restriction, or the radios and TVs are totally blocked by the government indirectly in some way. So everyone has a fear, and the owners, even the private owners of TV channels, have a fear of saying anything against the government. So the way that we use is Twitter. I mean, we communicate people by my Twitter. Is the way that I communicate everyone. When somebody is detained, I put a name. When I know that somebody is detained, I put a name in my Twitter, and people then know that, for example, his son or daughter is being detained. And when we know, for example, where they are, we publish it also in Twitter. This is the way we use. I mean, without Twitter, it would be impossible to do what we're doing, even to communicate with lawyers all around the country, because communications, even in Venezuela, are not like easy. They're not like they're very difficult to communicate. For example, in San Cristobal, Táchira, the state where most of the problems that happened and the repression is the worst, so difficult to communicate. So the way that we use is Twitter, and lawyers know, for example, what is happening all around the country and what is happening in their state. So that's the way. So it's not that it's, when you say that it is public or not, difficult to have it, to have this information in radio or TV.
Yeah.
There is no information. And officially, we don't have like the Attorney General or the Ombudsman talking or providing information about numbers of people detained. And if they don't provide this information, they don't provide any information about names. They don't list anything. For example, mothers and fathers have to walk all around detention centers, or what we call detention centers. I mean, police departments or military departments, in order to know if their children are there detained. So, because there is another thing that is important to know. They have regularly incommunicated them. So they don't have access to lawyers. They don't have access to families. So us, as an NGO that are attending people, we actually know exactly their health condition, for example, or if they are specifically in one place or the other when they are presented before a court. Here in Venezuela, the law established that when one person is arrested, he has to be presented before a court between 48 hours after they're being arrested. So that's the way how we know when somebody is actually detained or not, when they're presented to a court. That's the only way.
And remember that this is La Ventana Americana, a window to the Latin universe, from Stanford to the world. And we are transmitting from our studios in the heart of Stanford University, KCSU 90.1 FM, today Tuesday, as we do every Tuesday from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. We showcase the cultural universe of the Latin community in California and around the world in both languages, Spanish and English. For more information about this and all our shows, you may go to our online magazine, ventanaamericana.com, and even download this and other previous shows.
We also have to remember that Venezuela has the highest homicide rate and violence in the world right now. And in the first 2 months, there were 3,000 homicides or violent deaths in Venezuela. So these parents have their kids taken, and they have no idea if they are alive for the first 48 hours.
When somebody is arrested, because we're talking about 1,300 students that have been arrested in 1 month. So when a mother calls us looking for son or daughter, because we're not talking about sons, we're talking about daughters also. We're talking about men and women in similar way. I would say 50% women, 50% men are arrested. So the first thing that they believe is that they have disappeared, they have been killed, or they have been kidnapped. Because kidnapping, you're talking about homicide rate. But actually, we are a country where, for example, just last year, there were 20,000 kidnapped in Venezuela. 20,000. It means that we are a population of 29 million. This is more than 80 kidnappings for 100,000 people in Venezuela.
Wow.
So per 100,000 people. Of course, they never know what has happened when one person has disappeared, as they call it. So at the beginning, they call it, and you can look at the Venezuelan tweeters and always see how people talk about people that have been disappeared. But actually, they are not disappeared as what has happened, for example, in Argentina. In the 80s, that people just disappear and never appear anymore. It means that they have been incommunicated and they're being detained.
With all these violations of human rights and detentions of these young students, I bet you are overwhelmed with work right now and taking care of the immediate needs of the students and their parents. But in all the violations of human rights, are you guys documenting it? And to have evidence to bring these cases in international forums, international courts of violation of human rights?
Yeah, we have been documenting all human rights violations in the time that we have. At least at this time we have documented 40 churches, as I said, and we are trying to systematize all human rights violations, because when I say about 40 churches, it doesn't mean that they are just for the torches. That's the torches that we have verified and we have had the time to do. We have to live now in Venezuela to understand what we are doing, because when I'm saying that we are not sleeping, we as lawyers of Foro Penal, it means that we go to bed at 4 a.m. and we wake up at 6 a.m. because it's not a court like a regular court, say in the United States where you have a court and you go and you know exactly the time when somebody's going to be presenting the court, and then the judge is formal in time and all these kind of things. It's not like that. It's like sometimes you wait in the court office, in the court palace, as we call it. We wait sometimes the whole day in order to know when a person, a student that's being arrested is going to be presented. So I'm telling you that because we haven't had time at this moment to sit down in front of a computer and document everything. So we are doing it in the, you know, day-by-day basis. But of course, we already have, for example, notified the clerk of the United Nations specialized in torture, Mr. Juan Mendez, and he already knows about what is happening regarding tortures. We already have a file from 2004 in the International Criminal Court at The Hague, and this file that we have is because we believe there have been crimes against humanity committed in Venezuela, and it's not the first time that something like this happened. This is the first time that something, that they were, this is the worst period of human rights violations, but it has happened many times before. For example, in April 2013, there were 179 detentions of students, and there were tortures also. And in 2006, when a TV channel, a very important one, RCTV, was shut off by the government, we registered 251 detentions, and there were also police abuses and tortures. So it means that this is a systematic human rights violation that has happened in Venezuela, and we already have this file open in the International Criminal Court, and we're going to add what is happening now in this file that we already have.
Are you or some of your team threatened for your life?
Venezuela, you're always in a risk. Even for physical integrity, moral integrity, psychological integrity, because as you have said before, this is the second country with the highest murder rate in the world. We're talking just last year of 24,000 people killed in Venezuela. It's an anarchy, I would say. People just kill anyone like that. This is something that is happening besides the political problem. So, of course, we have a risk, and you are a human rights lawyer or activist, you are in some kind of risk. However, I will always say, and I in some way feel more secure when I'm part, for example, of international organizations and people in the whole world are looking at what we're doing now. That's the only security that I have. We, for example, are always in communication by email or by phone calls with the Inter-American Commission for Human Rights. We have asked them many times for measures to protect ourselves. So when risk is happening, when we feel that we are in a difficult situation, the Inter-American Commission for Human Rights communicates to the government and say our names, and in some way, is a kind of protection. But we are publicly known in Venezuela. I mean, Foro Penal is the most important human rights organization, at least regarding political situations. And this is some kind of protection, because people, it's not as easy, I would say, to do something against me than against someone is not known by anyone. So, but the answer is that every Venezuelan is in a risk. Every Venezuelan can be killed, and you will never know if this murder is related to politics or is related to the murder rate.
How do you see the tendency of the government right now on regards to the repression? It's been already a month, and you see it's the worst that you have seen ever.
Okay. Well, when you use repression and you overpass the limits of repression, then you affect the profoundly, I would say, the society. I would say that repression has been used overpassing the limit. So when we are talking about 25 people that have been killed already, we have, for example, just imagine just one girl called Geraldine Moreno, that they have shot her with, not with bullets, but with, I would say, another word, but with
perdigones.
Oh, yeah, we'll find it.
Shotgun.
Okay.
Yeah, but these perdigones are not plastic perdigones. These are...
It was live ammunition, no plastic bullets?
No plastic. So they have, for example, shot this girl in the street that she was demonstrating, like about 3 times in her face, and they have killed her, shooting her in the face just to punish her because she was demonstrating. This has happened in Carabobo State. This is just one of, I would say, more than 300 cases that they have done that. So imagine how people feel all around the country when they see that, for example, in pictures in Twitter, in pictures in Facebook, in pictures in Instagram. So we're being used to now of looking at pictures with blood in all Venezuelans all around the state, all around the country. So we are being used now to look at the military officers hitting people in the streets. We have been used to military officers arresting girls. When I say about girls, it means 16 years old, 18 years old, and touching them when they detain them, and they have said that even before a court. And I always say that if you haven't feel the toxic gas, it means that you don't breathe.
Yeah.
Everyone here in Venezuela have breathed toxic gas. And when I said that, I'm not exaggerating. It means that they're using it in a very undiscriminated way. They shoot anyone, not with bullets, but with these perdigones, but they shoot it very closely to punish and to injure people. When you, your public policy is supported by blood, so difficult that the people will just get used and forget what is happening. I don't see a way that it will be stopped. So even if they stop the current demonstration, say 1 month, they will come again, even bigger, I would say, in the next month. That's how I look at everything.
Free Speech TV is an independent, publicly supported non-profit TV platform that reaches 35 million households in the U.S. Using both television and the internet, Free Speech TV inspires viewers to become civically engaged in building a more just, equitable, and sustainable society. You can get involved by joining an online community, subscribing to the e-guide or RSS feed, sharing videos, of course, making a donation. For more information, visit freespeech.org.
So, as you say, we have seen all the horrible photos of these cases, but I was about to ask you about a particular case from last week when a seamstress was filming in her cell phone the violence inflicted by the National Guard to the citizens in the street, was stopped and violently beaten up in the street by a National Guard. And then a National Guard woman sat on her, took off her helmet and started hitting her with her helmet in the face, breaking many bones of the poor woman. And she was laughing and all the other National Guard were laughing and making jokes. So they proceed, arrest that poor woman. And something even more incredible happened, that after this was documented by many people from every possible angle, there are hundreds of photos everywhere, and it was very public. She was the one getting charges for violence
and not the officer. So are those also defined as torture, even if they were not made in a jail, hidden somewhere for information, they were just public, or they fall into a different semantic because, well, I believe it looks like a human right violation, but how is it called? What is this?
The United Nations Convention on Torture and Cruel Treatment includes tortures and cruel treatment. If a police officer hits you and it hurts in some way and it just hits you to punish you, this is a cruel treatment. And this is an international crime. So the difference between torture and cruel treatment, there is a very little differentiation. The thing is, people believe that torture is just made when you look at Guantanamo. Here, we have seen the Guantanamo cases already. People that have been detained, they have been abused, they have been hit, they have been, tortured in that way. But this is not just torture in the definition. Even that case that you're talking about, her name is Marvinia Jimenez, that she was hit by helmet and this kind of thing. It can be interpreted also as torture in the definition of the United Nations Convention of Torture. But it is not interpreted as torture. This is a cruel treatment. So it is also a very important crime. So everything what has happened is having qualified in different crimes. But now in Venezuela, you have all the varieties. You have tortures, you have cruel treatment, you have police abuse. For example, what is a police abuse? When you talk about police excess or police abuse, it means, for example, the typical case of a police persecuting, trying to haunt one person. When they're running, you know, they use excessive force. This is a crime, but it's not as important as torture. But excessive force means that you use the force in order to detain the person, and you use more force than that is legally permitted. But when, for example, you detain a person, you put handcuffs in this person. And for example, something that happened yesterday, one guy was detained, and they put handcuffs, and then they leave this guy for 3 hours, head covered, and with plastic bags and things like that in their head, in their face for 3 hours. This is not excessive use of force. This is torture in the definition of the United Convention of Torture. If you want an example of cruel treatment, I can give you one today, before yesterday. If you want an example of torture, I can give you another one. One and several examples. If you want another example of excessive use of force, I can give you another one. If you want an example of homicide because of torture, I can give you right now at least 2 examples. So everything is been happening in Venezuela this time.
What about when the perpetrators of this violence is they are the paramilitary groups, that they are not contained by the police or by the government? They are kind of given like leeway on being violent. Those cases can be documented and somehow linked to the government by their inaction?
There are a lot of cases of paramilitary groups. I wouldn't say, I don't know if the definition will be paramilitary, because a paramilitary means out of the military control. They use people that appear as civilians, and they actually use these people in order to kill with impunity. There is a difference when you see a military officer shooting that when you see a civilian shooting. But when this civilian is shooting, but with the support of the military officer, this civilian is not acting as a civilian. This is acting with the support of the military officer. So this is all together using these guns and these killings in order to control power. But this is not the first time that it's also happening. So we have already documented that before, and we have already told them, for example, to the International Criminal Court. What happened is, at this moment, what is the difference? This time, this period, or this problem that is happening and before, that now Twitter has come about. That's the difference. And because of Twitter, videos, pictures, and all these kind of things go directly to the public without going through the filter of the public media, of the media. Because the media, even the private media, but is filtered by the government, is censored by the government, or is censored by the owners of the private media sometimes. So now you can see when something is happening. For example, right now at 8 p.m., today in Venezuela, a repression comes about again in Altamira, one area of Caracas. And you could see the pictures in Twitter, and you know what is happening in Altamira at the same time. And you can see the people taking pictures and videos, and you can see what is happening. So now what you call paramilitaries or civilian shooting, are all Venezuelans and some of the world are looking at Venezuela, can see them shooting, but it's not that it's a new thing. This is a way that they have used for 15 years in order to create impression in the whole world that there are two groups of civilians fighting against each other. They're the civilians of the opposition and the civilians that are supporting the government. But it's not the truth. The civilians that shoot the opposition are the civilians that are paid and controlled by the government. But the thing is that when there is a demonstration, we, as Foro Penal, as our human rights organization, are prepared for assisting new detentions and for recording or documenting. Whenever a demonstration becomes violent, most of the times it's because these civilians supported by the government or either the military officers start some kind of repression. But when the demonstrations are pacific and they just permit them, for example, to go from one place to the other, most of the times nothing has happened. Of course, at this moment, because of the crisis that is living the whole country and the fear of Maduro, the president, of having people demonstrating on the streets, and the fear of Maduro that the international community looks at government that is being in some way criticized and is losing support of people on the street, then they will use repression in order to take people off the street. So,
what kind of action do you expect from the international community and the United Nations?
It's a difficult question because I've been working for 50 years. I was nominated as a young global leader in 2007 by the World Economic Forum. I'm a member of the Global Agenda Council of the World Economic Forum. I have a lot of friends around the world. I've been talking to all international organizations for many years. I've been in the Inter-American Commission of Human Rights, in the OAS, in the European Parliament. I mean, say whatever, and I've been there talking about human rights in Venezuela, and I haven't had any answer from the international community in all the time that I've been fighting against human rights violations. So my answer is not going to be an answer that maybe anyone would like, but I don't expect anything from the international community. I've been expecting a lot, and I haven't had an answer for a lot of human rights violations that has happened in Venezuela. And actually, it's very disappointing because Venezuela has been a country that has received a lot of people that have been persecuted around the world. We have received the people from Chile when the dictatorial regime, the rightist dictatorial regime, when the dictatorial regime persecuted them, we received that in Venezuela. We received all the Spaniards, all the people from Spain, when there was a important political crisis in Spain. We have received people from all around the world when things are happening in their countries. And Venezuela has been supporting the countries in Latin America, at least historically. But at this moment, I would say that there is a lot of opportunistic people, maybe more than in the past. Diplomacy, I don't believe in diplomacy when a human rights violation comes about. I don't believe in that. But that's the way that the international community works. And when I say that I'm at YGL and part of the World Economic Forum, I haven't received a letter, just a letter from the representative of the World Economic Forum, at least to ask, Alfredo, how are you, Alfredo? How things are going on there? Do you need any kind of help from the international community, so I don't expect absolutely anything.
Thank you for listening to La Ventana Americana. This is another show of our series about the crisis in Venezuela. And today we focus in the repression and the human rights violations during this crisis. And for that, our guest is Alfredo Romero, director of the NGO Foro Penal de Venezuela. He is a lawyer and the head of the main non-governmental group that helps victims of human rights violations in Venezuela.
Scholarship America believes that every student, regardless of financial status, deserves an opportunity to go to college. Since its founding, Scholarship America has distributed more than $3 billion to 2 million students nationwide. It supports a number of leading programs, including Dollar for Scholars, Dream Keepers, and Scholarship Management Services. You can help make a difference in the lives of students. To learn more, visit scholarshipamerica.org. And there's no
price to ask why. What has been the official answer of the person that is put by the government as a public advocate after you brought your documents with all these violations? What has been her official stand? How are they going to proceed and follow these cases?
Well, we have been seen by, even by the government as a serious human rights organization, even though we are very critical. They have received our claims, and they have committed that they will start investigating cases. And they have already started investigations of some of the cases of torture, for example. I believe that the government, I would say the representatives of the judicial system that is part of it, controlled by the government, as we have said many times, they have looking for ways of at least doing something in order to show the international community that they are doing some kind of investigation regarding this human rights violation. We are, in some way, expecting them to start investigations. We are following them in their investigation, but we, in some way, we don't wait too much when human rights violations happen. So if they don't do anything, we then go to the, for example, the United Nations Torture Commission in order to provide them with all these documents and all these torture cases, for example.
I will say about 10 days ago, even though we have been having a lot of problems, the chief attorney prosecutor, Luis Ortega Diaz, said in a press conference, I haven't received any cases, so this office cannot acknowledge that anything is happening. What is her position right now? Has she been changing or acknowledging any of the cases, and are they going to prosecute anything?
Okay, we have ratified these torture cases before her. She called me directly in a public, in a television program in order to go the next day. And I knew because somebody told me that she had said that. So actually I went to her office with part of the Foro Penal team and we presented all these cases to her. That was a very nice, I would say, conversation. We were, you know, talking about all these cases and she was actually very interested in all the cases. At least that was my impression at this moment. So that's why I say that I'm waiting for Attorney General office to do some kind of investigation. We are waiting for that and we're expecting that they do that. If they don't do that, then we continue to the international.
Alfredo, what is going on right now with Leopoldo López?
Well, Leopoldo is a political prisoner. That's it. When you talk about political prisoner, if there is not a legal explanation, because most of the allegations against a political prisoner are even ridiculous sometimes. So it's a political prisoner, and that's it. And people are fighting on the streets also in order to get him free.
Is he be able to communicate with anybody?
No, just can communicate with his wife and his wife and I think his children.
And remember, remember that this is La Ventana Americana, a window to the Latin universe, from Stanford to the world. And we are transmitting from our studios in the heart of Stanford University, KCSU 90.1 FM, today Tuesday, as we do every Tuesday from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. We showcase the cultural universe of the Latin community in California and around the world in both languages, Spanish and English. For more information about this and all our shows, you may go to our online magazine, ventanaamericana.com, and even download this and other previous shows.
What is the next step now? What is your prognostic? What's going to happen?
Well, I think demonstration will continue, and the dialogue that the government is looking for, it has failed, because this is a dialogue that they are looking without any conditions. I mean, you cannot get involved. If you are the one that are criticizing the government, asking for changes, public policy changes, and the dialogue is to continue exactly the same way, there is no possible dialogue. The government is using repression instead of reconciliation. It's using repression and violation of human rights instead of dialogue, of looking for changes.
Do you think the repression has backfired the government in the sense that has united the people in the streets?
I would say that they have begun as a spontaneous demonstration, and there were some kind of anarchy. Now students, from what I've seen, they've been more organized. Yesterday, for example, the doctors, not the medical doctors, organized an important demonstration. In some way they have supported these students' demonstration. So what I believe is that more and more people are going to be part of this demonstration. But, it's something that I have to wait and see.
Thank you. Thank you very much for your really valuable time. We really wish to take this message and bring it as far as we can. Thank you for talking to us, and hopefully something good will happen. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
¿Cuánto vale una lucha por una familia unida, por el amor a una tierra, por una patria querida? ¿Cuánto cuesta una historia, una cultura, una gente, sangre derramada por los héroes de la gloria? Pues cuesta toda la vida una Venezuela nuestra, un pueblo libre amado que respire grandeza. Cuesta toda la vida una Venezuela nuestra, el cielo azul de diciembre, con la sonrisa de mi gente. Tana, 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 tana. El ávila en la frente y el honor de mi gente. ¿Cuánto cuesta el olor del monte y la sabana, el calor del Caribe
y la mujer venezolana? ¿Cuánto vale vivir
con libertad y esperanza, con la expresión y el sabor de la dignidad del alma? Pues cuesta toda la vida una Venezuela nuestra, pueblo libre hermano, que respire grandeza. Cuesta toda la vida una Venezuela nuestra, el cielo azul de diciembre, con la sonrisa de mi gente. Cuesta toda la vida.
This is La Ventana Americana.
La Ventana Americana.
La Ventana Americana.
Esto es La Ventana,
La Ventana Americana.
La Ventana Americana.
La Ventana de la radio 90.1 KCSU Stanford.
From KCSU Stanford 90.1.
Desde KCSU Stanford.
KZSU Stanford 90.1 FM.
This is La Ventana Americana. From KCSU Stanford 90.1.
KZSU 90.1 FM.
And the program is La Ventana Americana.
A window to the Latin universe from Stanford to the world.
I am Isabel Jubes.
And I'm Elizabeth Trachtenberg.
Welcome. Bienvenido.
Welcome to another of my shows. I am your host and producer, Isabel Jubes. This is an archive show of La Ventana Americana. You can find this show and all the information related to it, together with more of my archive productions, on StanfordHispanicBroadcasting.org. Visit our website and be part of this, giving me your opinions and more about your ideas.